Women have been playing football for more than 150 years, and it's always been political. Some have been celebrated, but others have been ridiculed, criticized, and forgotten. This is the Forgotten 11, the hidden history of women's football.
I'm not going to the White House. No.
You know, there was a lot of critics talking about us, but we're back, so I suck on that one.
Give me the effing ball.
Playing like a girl means you're a badass.
Today, we're going to talk about the World Cup, and I have some interesting people to help share some whatever we come up with about the Women's World Cup coming up in, what is it, 18, 19 days now?
Yeah,
19
days, your time.
Yeah. So, obviously, this is the Forgotten 11 podcast. Acili, why don't you introduce yourself first?
Okay, hi everyone. My name is Asil. I'm a former football player, or soccer, as you like to call it in the US, and a current PhD candidate working on a thesis on women's football in Lebanon and in France.
All right, Tom, your turn.
All right, my name is Tom. I'm based in Chicagoland. I'm just a football, soccer enthusiast to longtime referee, coach, player, Chicago Fire season ticket holder who just loves the game.
All right, so with 20 days to go until the Women's World Cup, first question is, I'll just go straight to the first, who's going to take it all? Who's going to win?
The thing is, I think the U.S. national team, they're always the favorites to win it. And this year, with the current squad and the fresh blood, if you can put it that way, especially with the forwards, I think they are still the favorites. At some point, I thought that England had the chance, but with the injuries, Leah Williamson, Beth Mead, etc., etc., I think they're not at their best. France are good, but they also have a lot of injuries. So if I must pick a team, despite being a France fan, I must say the US.
Tom, how about you?
So it's funny. I'm a little bit the opposite direction. I want to pick the US, but the fact they've already won two in a row, they're in a transition period, and not just that, they're dealing with a lot of injuries themselves. I know the US is always a deep squad, but you could argue this is not their A squad. It's more of an AB squad. Several backups or players who are a little bit older, which experience can be a good thing, but not always. And I think France, given that they have the new coach now and everything, that they actually, I think they might surprise some people. And I think the U.S. might struggle in group play. And even though they should get out of their group, I honestly don't see them winning the whole thing. But I will add that I hope I'm wrong.
All right. Well, we'll get to France in a minute because I have some questions about France. So if you had to pick, say, a top four teams, like who do you think of? Obviously, the United States are always considered kind of the most dangerous or the most likely to get at least to the final. Who do you think are like the really dangerous teams to watch out for?
If I have to pick four, I think I have five or six candidates, right? I have to pick four. Yeah. I'm gonna say the U.S.
Pick five, whatever.
France, because despite the injuries, France are a good team. They have some very talented players and experienced players, but we're going to get to that later on. I have to say England, but also there's a lot of injuries. Spain, even though there are a lot of problems in Spain with the 15 and who's coming, who's not going. Alexia Putellas came back, Mapillon didn't make it. So they're not as tough or as strong as they used to be, especially in the Euros. And if I have to pick a fifth, and this is, I think this is not just an opinion, it's something I really want, is Norway. I'd love to see Norway going far because of Ada Hegerberg. She really deserves the spotlight. So these are my five.
Yeah, okay, so just a quick aside, if people don't know who Ada Hegerberg is, She won the Golden Boot a couple years ago and then refused to play for the national team because of inequality, like unequal conditions and all that. So she's back playing again for Norway. But interesting side story there. Tom, how about you? What are your four or five favorites?
Yeah, so the two I would name for sure, the U.S. and France. Kind of talked a little bit about those already. And then I also think England still has a great chance. I know Beth Mead is injured. I know they're dealing with some stuff. But I think it's kind of their time to shine. And my fourth one I'm going to say is Australia, given that it's being, you know, where it's being hosted and everything. They're a team that looks like they're gelling together. And it really can't be understated, just playing in front of your home crowd, already being used to the time zone, the time difference and everything. And that could be the slight edge that they need. So I'm going to throw Australia in there as my fourth team.
All right.
What about you?
Oh, go ahead.
What about you? Is it the same?
So obviously the U.S. and So some interesting things. England in the Euro was won just their second trophy ever. They won the 66 World Cup, and the women won the Euro. So the country that invented football only has two trophies. I find that amazing.
Yeah.
France, that's another interesting story. Like they got a new manager because many of the national team players refused to play for. What was her name? Diacre?
Yeah, Diacre.
Yeah, and so I forget the replacement. His name is Reynard, and the only reason I remember that is because it's the same as Wendy Reynard's last name. But they've only had 4 months. I mean, they're an experienced team. They know each other. But 4 months is asking a lot for France. They're still a very good team, but I'm surprised you guys didn't mention the Netherlands. Yeah, they came in second last time. And I'm kind of thinking a toss-up for my next choice between Germany and, I don't know, maybe Spain?
I think I didn't choose the Netherlands because if I'm looking at the draw, they're in Group E of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And Group F is where France and Brazil are. So there's a very big possibility that the Netherlands are going to play against France in the next round two. So, or even going to play with Brazil if they end up top of the group. So this is why I think, despite having very good players, not having Vivian Miedema, who's injured, but with Van de Donk and the others, they are a good team. But I think depth-wise, France are better. And we also forgot about Canada.
Yeah, Canada won their first international trophy.
Yeah, there's a lot of teams. There are a lot of teams, but I think it's just going to play on the details. Who has the most experienced players? As Tom said, it has to do with the time difference. France are going there early to get you the time difference.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, since we mentioned the groups, why don't I just read out the teams in each group, and then you guys, like, if you know anything, or what your predictions might be, any interesting stories from these teams. Okay, so Group A is New Zealand, Norway, Switzerland, and the Philippines. What do you guys think?
Tom, you want to go ahead?
I think the two teams coming out of there are going to be Norway and New Zealand. I think New Zealand's going to take advantage of the fact they're playing in front of their home crowd. I know it's a similar reason to Australia, but especially in some of these tournaments, I've just noticed these things in the Women's World Cup, Men's World Cup, Olympics, things like that. These teams tend to perform better when they're playing in front of their home crowd. I mean, I don't know if it's the psychology behind it or they're just, they do better because of the pressure or who. I can't tell you why, but I've noticed these things, and I really think New Zealand and Norway are going to be the two teams that are coming out of this out of the first group here.
I think I'm going to put New Zealand aside. I'm going to go with Jordan. It's very long. It's not that easy to get, but they do have good players. Lia Valti from Arsenal, Anna Maria Srnović from Barcelona, of course, Ramona Beckman and Alicia Lehmann. So they are a good team. But we never know how it's going to end up. But I think they've got something to show, especially that this is most probably Ramona Beckman's last year, Fulmi's last year too. So
okay, and
this is like these two.
And you said Norway and Switzerland?
Yeah.
Okay.
You have to go with Norway.
All right. I mean, Mike, I'm going to go with definitely Norway. And I think the Ferns, the New Zealand team, they got a taste of coming really close last time. I think I can see New Zealand getting out of the group. I don't know how much further they go. All right, so Group B is Canada, Nigeria, Australia, and Republic of Ireland.
I think this is Ireland's first ever participation, if I'm not mistaken.
I think so. Well, I mean, they expanded to 32 teams this year, so yeah. there's a bunch of countries that are there for the first time. I think it might be the Philippines' first time.
Morocco's first time, first ever Arabian team, Arab team. I'm gonna get to that also. This one, it shows that it's a good group. You know, the four are good. Ireland, they have a lot of experienced players. But Australia with Sam Kerr and the home advantage, they're gonna get through. Nigeria are good. They dominate Africa on the international level. They're good, but I think it's gonna be Australia and Canada.
Tom.
It's logical.
Yeah. So this one, not to just agree, but I think Australia and Canada as well. I mean, Canada just has the experience. They have several players who have over 100 caps. I mean, they have a couple of players who have over 200 caps. I think Christine Sinclair has over 300. She has more goals than most players that have caps. Players like her, Sophie Schmidt, you know, Ashley Lawrence, I think. But Canada, obviously, just they always have a very deep team. And then, yeah, Australia, just they have a good squad as well. And combined with the fact that some of these teams, it is their first time, you know, in the World Cup, you know, so debuting. I know Nigeria has been there before, but just you know, it's a lot just to make it. But I think Australia and Canada just have too much firepower to overcome.
All right. Well, I mean, I'm going to say something here that not necessarily this World Cup, but I think Nigeria, the women, and what are they, the Super Eagles or the Super Falcons? The men's team is one and the women's team is the other. I can never keep them straight.
The women are the Falcons, I think.
Okay, the Super Falcons.
Yeah.
I think the Super Falcons are going to be the first African team to win a World Cup.
You told me about this, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not this time, but one thing that I've noticed every single World Cup, the Nigerian women have to go on strike. They have to refuse to play because they haven't been paid in 4 years. And the fact that they're as good as they are without getting paid is kind of amazing. Whenever the Nigerian Football Association decides to back their women and actually pay them, so that they can have full-time jobs as football players, I think shortly after that, Nigeria becomes the first African nation to win the Women's World Cup.
Mm.
And first African nation to win any World Cup. It'll be the Super Falcons. But this time, I got to agree with you guys, it's probably Canada and Australia. All right.
You know, I have a fact. I saw this 2 days ago, 3 days ago. I was preparing something for the podcast. And Nigeria, I think, I've done 5-6 teams so far, but I think they're going to win it. Nigeria is the only country that only have one player who's playing in the Nigerian League. for the whole squad who's going to the World Cup, they're all playing abroad in Spain and France and the US and Portugal, Sweden. They only have one local player. So this shows that they're all playing abroad, playing professional football. So this brings a lot of experience for now and for later on. And it's weird. Like, if you look at the Spain national team, there are a lot of players playing locally. France too. Haiti, there's a lot of players playing locally, you know. And when you look at the Nigerian national team, they're all playing abroad.
Yeah. I mean, they've always been good. I think they're one of just a handful of countries that have made every Women's World Cup.
That's okay. some really interesting facts about Nigeria. I mean, maybe they pull an upset and come out of the group or something, but that's just something to keep an eye on. I did not know a lot about that, and now I kind of want to keep an eye on Group B and see how Nigeria does.
Yeah, I mean, if they can make it out of the group, I think they will go far. I mean, they usually do, but like if they make it out of the group, that's when they go in strike.
That makes sense. I do unfortunately know a little bit about that and some of the other programs that are dealing with those things, and it's sad and unfortunate.
Yep. And it happened. Like, I mean, Argentina in the last Women's World Cup, the players got paid $7 a day. $7 to live in Europe for a month. That's crazy.
Even us as Lebanon, we're getting paid more than that.
Yeah. Okay, so Group C is Japan, Costa Rica, Spain, and I think first-timers, again, Zambia.
Yes, first-timers for Zambia. So I'll talk about this. So I think Japan and Spain are, not to keep going with the obvious choices, but they do have little, you know, preview. I do have some upsets coming later, but I think Japan and Spain are the teams to come out of this group. Spain has a lot of good players. Again, they're experienced, you know, and Japan, both the men and women, they always play just as a unit. They know how to play the game of soccer, and just say whatever, every game, you know, they come in with the correct strategy, the correct formation, they move the ball well, they're efficient, they're a fun team to watch. They know how to read the game. Not all, you know, sometimes you see these teams that are very athletic, but they don't always kind of just read the game properly. Japan knows how to do that. They know how to play soccer. Spain has a lot of firepower. I gotta say a different word. Can't keep saying firepower. Spain is strong. Up top. So I see Spain and Japan as the teams going through.
You know, the Japanese women's team stole a Japanese word.
Mm-hmm.
So the team is called the Nadashiko, which more or less means perfect or ideal woman. And, you know, in traditional Japanese, that means, you know, like pretty and dainty and all that. And they just took that woman, that word, and basically made it mean a really strong, determined team that knows really well how to play soccer. And they will never be, I mean, they won in 2011. So, I mean, they're certainly good.
I think I'm just going to add something that we must, or maybe Haiti will do something. They have some good players. One of them just signed for Olympique Lyonnais, which actually signed in January, Melchi Dumourne. He signed in January. She's going to, after the World Cup, she's going to join the team. She's a very good prospect. She's young. I think she's 18 or 19.
Yeah, I just heard about that this morning. Oh, so we're moving on to Group D then. So England, China, Haiti, and Denmark. We already said a lot about England.
So one quick thing I've noticed, and I wanted to bring this up at some point, is even though this is the first Women's World Cup that's 32 teams instead of 24, I feel like these groups are as deep as ever. Like, there's multiple groups you can almost call a group of death. There's going to be multiple competitive games, and it just shows how much the game's really grown in the last 4 years, for sure the last decade, but especially the last 4 years. You look at Group D here, I mean, think about China, the first couple Women's World Cups, and I mean, I'm about to give you my picks, and China's not even in them. I'm going to take England and Denmark getting out of the group. And what, China has a strong team, they definitely do, but it's just the game has grown so much, and it's so good to see just how many good players there are in national teams and leagues as well, and how strong and how it's starting to thrive, you know. But yeah, I'm going to pick England and Denmark to make it out of Group D here.
Yeah, same here.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of have to agree. Two things. I mean, China in the 1990s, they were a very, very strong team. I mean, the thing that put women's soccer on the map was that U.S.-China final with, you know, Brandi Chastain ripping off her jersey. Yeah, that was 1999. And China, the team's nickname is the Steel Roses. And, I mean, in the 90s, they were really, really good. I can't say that they still are. I mean, I just don't know. So I got to go with England and Denmark as well. But another thing that amazes me about Haiti, Haiti doesn't have a government right now. There's just nobody in charge. There's like literally warlords on the streets. So for the Haitian women to not only qualify, but like actually do well when their country, I mean, there was earthquake a couple of years ago, then basically it's not quite civil war right now, but it's crazy there. So I hope they do well. I mean, just for the sake of maybe helping to unify their country a little bit.
Yeah, just on a side note, I think this topic, we should really put a whole episode to it, but recently the players in Haiti talked about a lot of sexual abuse problem within the federation and the team. So I don't know if this might play a role somehow negatively or even positively to show something. But apparently it's big, it's really huge that it's within the federation. People, the players were called up only if they offer something sexual. So this is an issue.
It's actually, you could pick almost any organization. I mean, the National Women's Soccer League last season, the fired, I mean, there's what, like 13 teams and more than half the head coaches got fired for basically, it's everywhere in women's football. Like, doesn't matter the level or the country. It's something that, yeah, I mean, pick a country, we could talk about it. Like Canada a couple years ago, their entire youth development was coached by basically perverts. So it's absolutely everywhere. Okay, so Group E, maybe the group of death. United States, Netherlands, Portugal, and Vietnam.
Yeah. And we did talk about this last time, Chris, when we had a little chat that you believe in Portugal or you're excited to watch Portugal.
I think they could be very sneaky and maybe make it out.
Make it out. Oof.
It is Portugal's debut, if I'm not mistaken, right? Them and Vietnam. So two teams in this group that that are making their debut.
True.
But I still think it's going to be the U.S. and Netherlands. I think Portugal will put up a strong showing against the Netherlands. And obviously, if they can tie them, then they would have a chance. Which they play the first game. So that very first game is Portugal-Netherlands. And I think that could, whoever wins that game obviously controls their destiny and should make it out of the group. But I think it'll be the Netherlands and the U.S. still.
Yeah, but did you call it the death group because of these three, or you think Vietnam will do something?
Well, I don't know anything about the Vietnamese team. But I do know at least a handful about the Portuguese players. Mm-hmm. But I think they're going to be stronger than people think. But I got to agree, it's probably going to be U.S. and Netherlands.
We did play in the qualifiers for the upcoming Olympics. Lebanon did play against Vietnam. They are good. And when you watch them, they are extremely fast.
Extremely fast.
But I still think there's a big gap between Vietnam, Japan, China, and the rest of Europe or the world.
Mm.
I think Vietnam's just going to be a matter of participating, first time participating, giving their all, showing or proving to their national team or even to their federation and country that they deserve to play football. And otherwise, I think it's going to be the US and the Netherlands. But as Tom said, it all depends on the first match, Netherlands, Portugal.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Group F, we're going to talk a lot about France in a minute.
Yeah.
but before we get to that, so Group F is France, Brazil, Jamaica, and Panama. Before we get to the picks, do you guys know the nickname for the Jamaican team?
Yeah, the reggae girls.
Partly, obviously, because Jamaica is the home of reggae music. But a lot of people don't know this. The Jamaican Football Association does not give them any support. They don't give them training. They don't give them uniforms. They don't give them coaches. So you're going to ask, well, how did they get there? Do you guys know who backs the Jamaican women's team?
I read something about it because I was preparing for an Instagram post, and it was a GoFundMe account. I don't know if you're talking about something else, but I saw that one of the parents created a GoFundMe account, and they managed to fund or gather a lot of money. But I have no idea who else. Maybe an association called the Reggae Girls. No.
No. It's Bob Marley's daughter.
Who?
Bob Marley's daughter heard about wanted to play, and that they couldn't afford a national team kit and things like that, and she's like, what? And so she took, like, she's obviously gets a portion of her father's royalties and all that, so she's doing pretty well, and she funds pretty much everything on the Reggae Girls team, so that's part of why they're called the Reggae Girls.
Nice. I'm gonna read about this.
Okay. So Brazil, Formiga retired. I think Marta's still playing, but I mean, she... Yeah. She
was called up.
Yeah, she. What is she, like, 39?
I think she's 38. She's 37. She's Megan Rapinoe's age.
Okay. Yeah. It just seems like she's been there forever. So. So... I think Brazil is going to be strong, but there's a lot of probably new players to us. So it could go either way, I think. Like, Brazil could be brilliant, or maybe not. We'll see. Mm-hmm. But who do you guys think comes out of this group?
I think this is my opinion, but I think this is one of the groups where there's a difference between the first two teams at 2 seconds. So France and Brazil are on one side, Jamaica and Panama are on the other. This is my opinion. Jamaica is their second World Cup participation. Panama, I think it's their first.
Mm-hmm.
And I think France and Brazil will dominate. So, yeah. This is one of the obvious groups for me.
Yeah, Tom.
So I think France is definitely making it out. And then yes, it is Panama's first World Cup ever. And I don't see them making it out of the group. But this one, I'm going to pick one of my upsets, and I think Jamaica is going to make it out of the group over Brazil. Brazil has a lot of older players. I don't think they're quite as strong as they have been in years past. Jamaica has Kadi Jasha, who is a great player for Man City. A few other players, a very hungry team. And yeah, they did have to talk a little bit more about that GoFundMe that was created. I know a few articles came out a few weeks ago saying the Jamaican Federation wasn't even going to fund flights for them for the World Cup, some other issues. There were a few things, few articles, there's a few statements put out by official statements put out by the team. But yeah, I think they're going to come in with a chip on their shoulder here, and it's going to be France and Jamaica making it out of Group F.
All right. So I got to ask, how far do you think France gets? I mean, they're a good, strong team. But, you know, they've only had 4 months with the new coach. Do you think that makes a difference?
The problem is with the... In football, it's that you always want your team, your favorite team, to reach you want it to reach. So if I'm going to talk with my heart, I'm going to say the finals and try to get... But...
They got really close last time.
Yeah. And there's always this problem with France, even at the last Euros, that it's always the last match where they don't manage to score. I remember in 2015, we dominated Germany, and Germany scored the last goal and got qualified. So I think it's going to be a semi-final for France.
Yeah, I mean, when France played the U.S. in 2019, that felt like a final. I mean, it was just a really good match. And I thought France should have... If France hadn't gotten paired with the United States before the final, I think France would have been in the final.
Yeah, it's always that last touch for France, you know, against the U.S. in 2019. You want this player who can finish the match. In the U.S., it was Megan Rapinoe with her free kick. Boosted the team. In France, they always have this problem with the leading figure in attack. You have Wendy Renard in the back and up front. They were young. We wanted, I was hoping for Katoto to make it. She's not going to make it. Gianni is back from her injury. Cascarino is missing. So we don't have this player up front who can win it for the team. So I think semifinals.
All right. So Group G is Sweden, South Africa, Italy, and Argentina. What do you guys think?
You can call this one a group of death. You know, it's not it's four teams of almost the same level with a very slight advantage for Sweden. I think I'm going to go with the Sweden. I'm hesitating between Italy and South Africa.
Really?
Okay, good. So I think I'm going to go with Italy and Sweden.
Tom?
Yeah, so all of these teams bring experience. No team is making their debut. A lot of these teams just have players that have a lot of caps, that have just been to the World Cup before. So this is definitely the most experienced group, in my opinion, out of all eight groups. And I think Sweden for sure is going to go through. I think this is going to be a very close group. There's going to be a lot of hard-fought games. You're going to be... see some very close matchups. You know, it's going to be a game that could come down to substitutions or little changes at halftime, you know, little adjustments that coaches make. But besides Sweden, I also think Argentina is going to go through. I think the women are going to kind of feed off what the men did a few months ago and that they're going to come out of the group here, and that's going to be Sweden and Argentina.
Okay. Well, I'm going to go with Sweden just because they almost always get out of the group stage. And I'm kind of torn between Italy and Argentina, but the reason is not the men just won the World Cup, or that Messi just finally got his World Cup. I think last time around, you know, when it was this kind of a scandal that Argentina was only paying their women $7 a day, and I think maybe if there's any justice, the Argentina Football Association may have been shamed into actually creating a decent program for them. And if that's the case, I think Argentina could do very well. But like you guys, it's kind of like a toss-up between Italy and Argentina or Italy and South Africa. Okay, last one is Germany, Colombia, South Korea, and Morocco. What do we think?
Tom, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, I think Germany's going to go through. Again, you know, I just, they're a strong team. They know how to play the game. They have a lot of good players. So I think for sure Germany's going to go through. And then my second team that I'm going to pick is South Korea. This is a group, again, that I think has several, like all four teams are quality teams, quality opponents. It could come down to, you know, a missed opportunity here or there. But South Korea, I'm going to give the slight edge because of them being in the same time zone. I know I've brought it up a few times, but with Australia and New Zealand being so far off from the European teams and America and Canada, you know, Brazil, all of South America as well, just it really gives you a little bit of an advantage to these few teams here. So I'm going to say Germany and South Korea are going to be the teams that make it out of Group H here.
Germany is definitely second round. Unless, you never know in football, but they have the upper hand. Colombia, I'm actually looking forward to watch Linda Caicedo. First World Cup, such a young player. Real Madrid's next prospect, so this might be interesting to watch. Daniela Montoya, etc. South Korea, I don't know. I don't see them making it past the stage. There's only, from the players, of experienced players, you only have Ji So Yeon with Chelsea, and you have Hyun with West Ham. I think it's going to be between Colombia and Morocco. It's a very big wishing for Morocco to make it. First ever Arab team to reach the Women's World Cup. And I think Other Arab teams are very far away, very far behind. Morocco are really counting on the players who are playing in France and Spain and England. The whole federation in Morocco did a plan. It worked with the boys in Qatar. You saw the performances. It might work with Morocco, especially if you look at the squad. You have some good players, Rosella Ayan with Tottenham, you have Gizdan Shebak, you have Yasmin Mrabet in Spain. Might be a good one. They've been playing against a very good team. Yesterday they played against Italy today. It ended 0-0. They played against Bosnia. They're preparing. Okay, so I'm going to go with Morocco and Germany, but this is a heartfelt, hard-decided group, our decision.
Sure. Well, I'm going to, obviously, Germany has won, what, the Euros five times or something? So they're a definitely good team. I have to go with South Korea, but for a different reason than you might think. When I first got into soccer, I was living in South Korea. In 2002, Korea and Japan co-hosted the Men's World Cup, and Korea went mad for soccer. So when I was there in 2006, the World Cup was in Germany, and the entire country, every single person, stayed up all night long to watch all those matches. And so South Korea now has a generation of young women who have grown up on football. So like this would be the time for those young Korean women who got hooked to be coming into their own. It's also, you know, Korea is one of the first Asian countries that, like 70 years ago, that put on paper that women were legally equal to men as citizens. So all that sort of, like, I think South Korea is kind of a dark horse that nobody's going to see coming. I think they're going to do better than most people think. Okay, so Asile, why don't you tell us about your that TikTok video that you showed me?
Yeah, actually, I'm trying to work on TikTok. I'm not a big fan of TikTok, but a lot of people recommended that to make the podcast work, I have to go through TikTok. It's where the young people are spending the whole time. So I was trying to find, you know, where you can make an effect, where you can choose your favorite player. And there's a, there are a lot of players, of men players, or pick your favorite team, pick between Cristiano or Messi, pick favorite national team, a lot of options, rank these players, and there are zero options for women's football. So I put something up, I chose eight players, or eight of the best. Now I'm working on another effect, I just created an effect where you get to choose between Marta, Ada Hegerberg, Wendy Renard, so options. And I think just nice to shed light on women's football mm-hmm. in any possible way, through podcasts, right. through media.
So, right. So the video that you showed me was who's going to get the golden boot this time around?
Yeah, yeah.
So who do you think, who's your favorite to get the golden boot this time?
Oh yeah, it was this one that I showed you. I think it's gonna depend on who's going to reach the farthest level.
Sure.
Stuff. Apparently, Alex Morgan is having an excellent season ever mm-hmm. since he returned, and actually the city of San Diego. So maybe if the U.S. reached that far. Alex Morgan is gonna end up winning the Golden Boot. I don't even know if he's gonna play as a starter or coming off the bench.
I think she's a starter.
Yeah, I'd love for Ada Hegerberg to win it, but I don't think that Norway is gonna reach this far. A lot of people are talking about Sam Kerr.
Yeah, Sam Kerr is amazing.
Yeah, I love Sam Kerr. She's one of my favorites, but I also don't think Australia is going to go that far unless, you know, in the group stage, a match ends with 7-0, 4-0, and she scores a lot of goals. But I think I'm going to go with, and this is very bizarre or surprising, but I think I'm going to go with Candidato Jenny from France.
Okay.
She has the whole team's pressure on her shoulders to excel up there, up front, so I'm gonna go with Jenny.
All right, Tom, what do you think? Who's gonna win the Golden Boot?
I'm going with Trinity Rodman. She's going to surprise people, take everybody by storm, put up a hat trick against Vietnam, and she's going to be the Golden Boot winner. But I also think that the U.S. is not going to win the entire thing. I hope I'm wrong about that. I actually truly hope I'm wrong about that. But at least even if we don't win the whole thing, I think we'll have a Golden Boot winner.
All right. Well, I was talking to Silly last week. I also picked Trinity Rodman, just because she's kind of an amazing player. For anybody that does not know, Trinity Rodman is the daughter of the basketball player Dennis Rodman. So they have winning in their blood, I think. But if it's not Trinity Rodman, I would love to see Sam Kerr get far enough to that she can win a Golden Boot. I'm just going over the teams again. I can't think of anybody else that
can step up. Yeah,
yeah, that could get all the way to the final and get the Golden Boot, aside from those we've mentioned. Okay, so
I have a question. Do you think that if Sam Kerr ends up winning the Golden Boot at the upcoming World Cup and with the season Chelsea had, is she the favorite for the next year's Ballon d'Or?
I think she'd be up there.
Has to be.
Yeah, because I have this debate with my friends that this year we didn't have this player who overcame or topped everyone else. Alexia Putellas was out most of the year. At Lyon, no one showed up this year. At PSG, there were no one. So I think Sam Kerr, if she plays well this season, she's going to end up as the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so maybe not the last question, but close to it. What are you guys looking forward to most about this time around, this Women's World Cup? All right, and before you answer, I'm just going to tell you a short story. In 2011 or 2012, in 2010, in the Men's World Cup, North Korea played the United States in the group stage. And it was the first time that North Korea played a sporting event live between the United States and North Korea. They'd never done that before because they didn't want to lose to their great enemy. So they figured the U.S. men aren't that great. We can beat them. And so everybody in the country was required to watch. The TVs, just the government turned them on remotely. And they lost. Several of the players defected in the stadium. And the ones that returned to North Korea were never seen again. So nobody knows quite what happened to them. The following year, or maybe it was 2 years later, it was either in the Olympics or the 2011 World Cup, the United States women played North Korea. And I was watching that match in a baseball sports bar, and I was the only one watching it. That was one of the best matches I've ever seen, because the North Korean women were kind of pretty convinced that if they lost to the U.S., they'd be killed. And I watched that game pretty much by myself for the first half. And then at halftime, some people were asking me, like, hey, what are you watching? And, like, why is it important? And I explained that the U.S. was basically the Brazil of women's soccer. And, you know, the North Korean women, I mean, by halftime, I thought both teams were going to be completely exhausted. And they went all out for the entire second half, both teams. But like I said, I was watching that game, one of the best games I've ever seen in my life, by myself. In 2019, 8 years later, all of the bars and restaurants in Chicago opened up early because the match started, I think, at 9 o'clock here to watch U.S. Netherlands in the final. And it was absolutely packed. Like, a place that usually doesn't even open until 10 or 11, they opened at 8 a.m. It was standing room only. Every single person in place was watching. And when Roosevelt got that final goal to secure the World Cup, the entire place went mad. So just in 8 years, there's that huge change of people paying attention and actually wanting to watch. So, I mean, that's kind of what I'm looking forward to, seeing how much, even though it's on the other side of the world and the games are sometimes difficult to watch here, I'm looking forward to people finally, once again, putting some attention on the women's game. What are you guys looking forward to?
Yeah, so a couple different things. Yeah, the North Korea stuff is crazy. I know, yeah, that 2010 game, I think they lost to Portugal by 7 goals, and it got shut off after it was like 4 or 5 goals or something, that men's team. And yeah, that was like the first game ever telecast live. So not a good game to lose to Portugal by 7 goals, and I was shut off halfway through, whatever it was. And yeah, I was with you in that 2019 final. That was crazy. Seeing that. I remember the 2015 final when the U.S. was up 4 goals in like 14 minutes or something. I know that 2019 final was a lot of fun. I remember watching that with you. And yeah, that bar was packed compared to a normal Saturday morning. But I think what I'm looking forward to most personally is I know somebody on the Jamaica team. She used to play with my sister growing up. She grew up in Chicagoland, Kalissa Van Zanten. So she plays for Notre Dame currently, at the University of Notre Dame, plays soccer for them while earning a degree there, but also plays for the Jamaica national team. Somebody who played for a couple of U.S. youth camps. I remember seeing her play, and I used to referee high-level soccer as well, and I remember seeing her when I reffed her and just easily the best player on the field. It's one of those where it's like, that's the person who you understand why they are playing, you know, at a top college. For those who don't know, Notre Dame's a top women's soccer college, university. And just, you know, so it's just kind of cool to see something personal, see somebody who grew up here in Chicagoland and everything and played at a local club here, now representing a country in the Women's World Cup. That's just incredible to think about. But I know about that, a bigger picture, I hinted at this earlier, but just the amount of talent and all these new teams, so all these countries that are making their debuts, just so you can keep seeing the sport grow. So you see people, these women can go back, you know, and be proud of their accomplishments, whether they made it out of the group or not. They made it to the World Cup. I mean, that's an incredible feat alone. And just being able to go back and celebrate and see the sport continue to grow, that's awesome. That's 32 teams. I really don't think it dilutes it that much, especially when you look at how many talented, you know, players there are. So I'm just excited to see more games and more opportunities for people to shine and make their mark. And just, you know, there's no such thing as too much soccer. So I'm just looking forward to the expanded World Cup overall.
Yep.
I think I have a lot of things I'm looking forward to. First one, it's totally personal. The last World Cup, I was still in Lebanon. And in Lebanon, all of the Arab countries, you know, because of the fact that women's football is not that much supported, the matches weren't all broadcasted. They only broadcasted some of the important games, you know, US against France, Brazil against someone. So I didn't really have the opportunity to watch all the games live. This year, I think I'm gonna actually be able to live the whole experience, you know, especially that in France time, the matches are at 9 p.m., 10 p.m., 10 a.m., sorry, 9 a.m., 10 a.m., and I work from home, so I can control my time, I can watch all of the games. On the wider level, I'm looking forward to many of the things. I already talked about the fact that Morocco are playing, and at some point, if France plays against Morocco, I don't even know who I'm gonna choose. I think I'm gonna end up choosing France, but it's a pleasure, or it's an honor to find a team from the Arab countries, especially that within the Arab countries, until now, women's football isn't accepted as in other countries. But I'm also looking forward for something particularly incredible. That despite the fact that in France the stadiums were almost fully booked or full, the French citizens come to watch just to watch, you know. So you don't really have this hype around women's football. In Australia, it's different. I know that in Australia, everyone, whoever's coming to the match, they're really coming to watch football, to support Sam Kerr, support Megan Rapinoe. So it's really gonna be a focus on the game, on the growth of the game. So I'm looking forward to this promotion of the women's game. And lastly, this is something very technical. FIFA decided this year to use a tool. I don't know if you heard about this. It's called the SMPS. And it's an automated tool that the FIFA used in Qatar in the World Cup, in the Men's World Cup, and so made a tool that protects players from cyber abuse.
Oh.
Yeah, it's going to target homophobic citations or abuses. It's going to target sexist abuses, racist abuses. And in the World Cup in Qatar, you know, when Harry Kane missed the penalty against France, that match, France against England, was the match that showed the highest level of racism. More than 30% of the whole tournament's racist or sexist abuses were from this match after Harry Kane missed the match.
Mm.
If you remember, in 2019, when Wendy Renard scored a goal against her team, it was by mistake.
Mm-hmm.
2 days, 3 days later, on Twitter, you could only see French people calling Renard a monkey, and just because she's black, you know, a lot of sexist and racist abuses. So this year, the FIFA are working on banning this. So this is an amazing step forward. We won't see all of these shameful comments on social media.
Mm. Well, that's very good news. One thing, I forget what the United States was suing for equal pay, and that got resolved. So more or less the U.S. is going to get paid pretty similarly to what the men are getting paid. Australia in 2019 started a campaign to basically, if so, there's roughly 10 times the amount of money for the men's World Cup as there is for the women's. But so what is it? 3.5-4 billion people watch the men's World Cup. Last women's World Cup, I think it was 1.5 billion people were watching the women's World Cup. So they're closing the gap there, but the prize money isn't catching up as fast. So it's different countries are resolving it different ways. But one of the things that Australia and a couple of the Scandinavian countries said was that the likelihood of, like, the men's team is called Socceroos. The women's team is the Matildas in Australia. The likelihood that the Socceroos will win a World Cup versus the Matildas, it's much higher for the Matildas, you know, because they're just better. So there, different countries are trying to resolve the way the money is, the prize money is passed out. So that's hopefully going to be an improvement. Like, participants and, I mean, the first couple of Women's World Cups, none of the teams got paid anything. So now that we're talking about pay equality rather than pay at all, that's an improvement. And hopefully, you know, despite the fact that, you know, it, for folks in America, the tournament's on the other side of the world, hopefully a lot more people are watching, and hopefully, you know, it expands every year, so it just kind of forces FIFA's hand to pay equally on some level.
FIFA put in place individual rewards or awards. Did you read about it?
No.
It's per player. Per player. If the player plays in the group stage, she's going to get $30,000.
Okay.
If she reaches round two with her team, she gets $60,000. If she wins the World Cup, she gets $270,000. So for a team like South Korea or, as you just said, Jamaica, $30,000 is great. It's not great. It's good for the players. Especially that Argentina took $7 a day.
Right.
So $30,000 is great. And I think Tom said that he thinks, if I'm not mistaken, he thinks Jamaica will make it to round two.
Yeah,
this might be a push for them. If you reach round of 16, each girl will get $60,000.
Right.
Might also play a role.
And part of the reason for that, Chile did not qualify for the Women's World Cup. One of the things, at least leading up to 2015 and 2019, the Chilean Football Association didn't schedule any matches for them. When this is true, like, in Nigeria, depending on how much money, because you get paid something. The federation gets paid something for the team just being in the World Cup, despite how far they go. They get more, obviously, the further they get. But in a lot of countries, the Football Association was just taking all that prize money, the women's prize money, and putting it into the men's sport. So the women, maybe they didn't get to the final match or the third place match, but they're like, I mean, Nigeria does very well, but when FIFA pays out to the Nigerian Football Association, those women often don't see a dime. And it's similar in a lot of other countries. So I'm glad that there's some protection so that, you know, these women can get paid something. All right, so let's see. Anything else you guys want to say about this year's World Cup?
No.
I mean, I just think it's great how much the sport has grown. A lot of these games in America are going on between about 10 p.m. and 6 a.m., and there's a lot of cities that have said they're going to have, like, bars and watch parties and everything, and I don't think that would have been a thing, you know, for the women's game 10 to 15 years ago, unfortunately. But that's awesome just that, like, all these cities are planning to be able to have this, like, one of the women's games, I think, kicks off, like, 2 a.m. Chicago time, Central time. And I know there's going to be places open, and just it's cool to just kind of see the fact that the country's taking this seriously and everything, you know. It's just great, great for the sport.
Mm-hmm. All right.
You know that I just want to talk about something because you're one of the first who pushed me to work on this podcast. I don't think it's normal, but you know when I work on an episode on women's football in the Middle East, it gets a lot of viewers or listeners. And when I get something on Women's World Cup, it's not getting the interactions I was hoping for. And I think this is a problem. It shows the difference. You just said that the bars are open in the U.S. for the girls' team. And you see that in Lebanon, and I'm sure in other countries too, Arab countries, Middle Eastern countries, we don't have this this passion for the Women's World Cup. And the Men's World Cup, you're going to see everyone putting flags in their balconies and cheering for their teams. And women's football, we're not there yet. And for me, it's a vicious circle. So if the society isn't interested, the game isn't going to get better. The federation will not invest and money will not come. So, I'm preparing for a podcast in Arabic. Just like this one, we're going to talk about the World Cup, and you see that doesn't interest a lot of people just because it's women's football. So I really hope this will change, and this is why I love the World Cups, because I believe it's a great space to boost the game.
Yeah, absolutely. And honestly, it's people like you and me that, you know, have a podcast about women's football that help just push it just a little bit further and a little bit further every time. I mean, the 1991 Women's World Cup was not broadcast outside of China because they didn't think it would make any money. And it's like if one of these teams, like say Vietnam or Jamaica, doesn't do well, the federation has no interest, so they don't promote it. But if they promoted it, there would be interest.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the lessons of the National Women's Soccer League here. The U.S. Soccer Federation, the first two women's leagues here, U.S. Soccer didn't care. They didn't help them out. They didn't do anything. And this time, now they are. They're promoting them. But it's just, like, it's still a struggle because, I mean, I know a lot of people that watch NWSL matches. Even if they don't necessarily follow soccer, they get to see some of the big famous stars that play here. But it's not on TV. I mean, it was on TV for a couple of years, but now it's not. It's just, it's a little bit maddening. Like, there's steps forward, but then there's steps backward.
Yeah. Two forward, one backwards. Ada Hegerberg used to talk about this all the time.
Right.
Each time the women's football takes a step forward, we find ourselves two steps backwards.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's... I don't know. In the U.S., they always talk about, you know, there's this World Cup bump. So whatever league is around, it does really well in the year of the Women's World Cup, and then people lose interest. People don't lose interest, and not as much as people think. What happens is it becomes impossible to find matches to watch.
Mm.
Yeah. I mean, that's true everywhere. Like, it just takes people promoting it. If FIFA won't do it, or if the local soccer federations won't do it, we have to.
True.
All right, guys. Well, we're going on a little over an hour, so thank you, guys. Any last thoughts? Oh, Asili, you gotta tell folks what your podcast is.
Yeah, actually, so far the podcast is in Arabic, but I'm working on adding English, and it's a podcast focusing on women's sports or women's football, but also women's sports in the Middle East, because we have zero podcasts focusing on women's sports, and just a platform where we can talk about the history of the game, the social aspects of the game, and we're working on creating an English part of the podcast, especially with, you know, the reels on Instagram and YouTube videos where I can talk in English, because each time I look at the insights, I notice that a lot of people who search for my podcast are living in the US.
Mm-hmm.
So they are basically American people. They think it's in Arab and in English, and they're saddened or shocked when they see that it's in Arabic. So I think I'm gonna go ahead and work on Arabic, on English episodes too. And it's called the Super Subs.
All right, so
special name, but I'm gonna get to that in a podcast soon.
There you go. Well, I think you should definitely put something out in English before the World Cup.
Yeah, I'm gonna try to do this. Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, Tom, any last thoughts?
No, just that this has been a lot of fun. I am looking forward to a fun 4 weeks of women's soccer here.
Absolutely. Okay, so just in case anybody forgot, it's July 20th. And I saw at least some of the matches are going to be 7 p.m. Chicago time, so you don't have to stay up until the middle of the night for all of them.